The air hangs heavy with humidity as Dr. Wren Muller examines the body pulled from the murky waters of the Louisiana Bayou. Something about this dictum feels different. The precise placement, the unusual pink coloration indicating refrigeration after death. This isn't just another murder. It's a performance. In the atmospheric depths of New Orleans, a methodical killer is orchestrating a deadly game, leaving bodies like breadcrumbs for investigators to follow. What makes this predator particularly terrifying isn't just his meticulous planning or medical expertise, it's his ability to blend seamlessly into society, appearing utterly normal while harboring monstrous desires. As Wren studies the evidence, she can't shake the feeling that this killer knows exactly what he's doing, and worse, that he's enjoying the chase. Jeremy Rose starts each morning with the same breakfast ritual: 2 eggs, toast, black coffee, before heading to his unremarkable data entry job at Lovett Logistics. His colleagues see a quiet, efficient worker. None suspect that beneath this carefully constructed facade lurks a monster who keeps victims chained in his basement, studying their fear with clinical detachment. "You want to learn about something, son? You have to open it up," his father once told him while field dressing a deer, advice that became the twisted foundation of Jeremy's murderous philosophy. What makes Jeremy truly terrifying is his self-awareness. He compares himself to the corpse flower, beautiful and alluring despite its deadly nature. This sophisticated predator doesn't just kill, he creates elaborate productions. He refrigerates bodies to control decomposition, strategically places them for discovery, and leaves literary clues pointing to future crime scenes. His victims aren't just targets, but educational opportunities, test subjects for perfecting techniques like spinal cord severing and ice pick lobotomies. Imagine sitting across from someone at a bar, sharing drinks and stories, never suspecting they're mentally calculating how long your body would take to cool after death. New Orleans isn't merely a backdrop. It's Jeremy's accomplice. The city's geography provides his perfect hunting ground. Isolated swamps where screams vanish, dense cypress forests concealing movement, and murky waters preserving victims until their dramatic discovery. He selects locations for symbolic impact: the jazz festival where he plants a body beneath the stage, St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, the city of the dead, where he buries a victim alive. His property on Evangeline Road transforms Bayou into a prison, acres surrounded by an electrified fence where he forces victims to run while watching through night vision cameras. "Run, little rabbit," he taunts through hidden speakers. The environment adds its own terrors: water moccasins in murky water, swarming mosquitoes, and disorienting darkness making every step treacherous. Jeremy weaponizes our primal fear of darkness, turning the natural world into his hunting grounds, where humans become sophisticated prey, valued only for the chase they provide before their inevitable deaths. Dr. Wren Muller combines scientific precision with deep humanity in her work. Examining a Jane Doe from the water, she notices a braided bracelet and contemplates the woman's life and final moments. This empathy fuels Wren's determination to identify the unnamed and secure justice for the forgotten. Her expertise manifests in careful observation. A corpse's pink coloration indicates refrigeration, revealing the killer's methods. Multiple ligature marks on another victim's throat show repeated strangulation before the fatal act. Her emotional investment sometimes creates tension with her husband Richard, who gently reminds her that catching killers is detective work. What distinguishes Wren is her remarkable intuition. When investigators dismiss a library card bearing the name Philip Trudeau found at a crime scene, she can't ignore its potential significance. Like those moments when something feels inexplicably wrong, Wren's instincts aren't mere feelings, but crucial insights, connecting disparate details into patterns only she perceives. The investigation dramatically shifts when we learn that Wren Muller was once Emily Maloney, the only survivor of the Bayou Butcher 7 years earlier. This revelation occurs during an autopsy when she spots a victim wearing an anatomical heart charm bracelet identical to one she once owned. The connection hits her like a physical blow, explaining why this case affects her so deeply. Rand's career as a forensic pathologist represents her attempt to reclaim control after trauma. By understanding death, she seeks to master what once terrified her. Yet trauma persists in her habits. She keeps every light burning, all 27 bulbs changed religiously every 3 months. She checks locks 3 times, keeps her phone constantly charged, and maintains an emergency bag by her door. When Jeremy breaks into her home and steals her grandmother's diamond ring, the last piece of her former life, he violates her security again. The ring appears at his latest crime scene with a note, "Welcome back, Emily." Ren's experience shows how trauma echoes through time, maintaining its essential horror despite our elaborate routines for safety. At its core, this narrative is a psychological chess match between predator and prey, each anticipating the other's moves. Jeremy believes himself intellectually superior, viewing investigators as separated from criminals only by false morality. This arrogance becomes his vulnerability, as he underestimates Rand's determination and insight. Rand's advantage stems from being both investigator and survivor. Having escaped Jeremy's hunting ground years earlier, she understands his methods firsthand. When she reveals to Detective LaRue that she is Emily Maloney, she connects crucial elements: the hemlock poisoning matching a previous victim, the significance of the most dangerous game chapter, and the meaning behind the library card. Their psychological battle culminates in the final confrontation at Jeremy's property. When Jeremy attacks with a crossbow, hitting LaRue in the leg, Ren grabs LaRue's gun but freezes, unable to pull the trigger despite her determination. This moment reveals the lasting impact of trauma, even as she's built a new life dedicated to justice. The novel ends without closure. Jeremy escapes through the swamp, his bulletproof vest saving him from Detective Will's shot. As he pushes through the bayou, fighting mosquitoes and mud, he embraces his identity as another bayou butcher, ruthless and bloodthirsty. He navigates treacherous terrain despite his wounds, calculating each step. This open ending implies the hunt continues beyond these pages, with Jeremy adapting to new hunting grounds and Ren potentially pursuing him across state lines. His knowledge of law enforcement procedures gives him advantages against capture. He's already planning his next moves, considering safe houses and alternate identities he's cultivated over years. For Ren, this lack of resolution demands continued vigilance. Though she failed to capture Jeremy, she's confirmed his identity and methods, creating possibility for eventual justice. Her journey from victim to investigator remains incomplete, suggesting trauma resolution, like justice itself, is often a process rather than an event. Perhaps most terrifying is how ordinary evil can appear. The person at work, in line, or on your street might harbor unimaginable secrets. The hunt continues, not just in the bayou, but in everyday life, where vigilance becomes necessary survival.